This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
Before we continue, one of the ways we keep all of our content for you, the listener, free of charge is our amazing sponsors, and today, Anchor is one of those sponsors. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free, there's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcasts right from your phone or computer. Anchor is going to distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere podcasts are listened to, and you can even make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to Anchor.fm to get started.
Welcome back, fellow outcast, and thank you for joining us. It's all coming to a head this week as we break down the season finale. That's right, it is season 1, episode 10, This Little Light. And please, stop poking my milky dead eyeball. I have a show to do. Stay tuned.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
It's almost as spooky as the show is, for real. I don't let it's the disembodied children voices singing.
Yeah,
that really ensures that I won't sleep tonight or at any point in the near future. Welcome back. I am Lex Michael. All of our social media at the Lex Michael, and with me to talk about the gripping, harrowing season finale of Outcast is this wonderful panel, which includes.
I'm Lucretia Lyon, guys, so you can always find me at LACRETIALYON anywhere on the internet, since there is only one.
Hey, guys, I'm Joelle Monique, and you can find me everywhere at Joelle Monique.
Hello, everyone. I'm Abby Vega. You can find me on Twitter and on Instagram at _AbbyVega. It's like getting faster. It made me talk faster.
I know, it's way jauntier than
we're
it was
like,
when we started.
Hold on.
All right. So now we're just going to dance, I guess, until the music stops. So while we're moseying along in our seats to this jaunty tune, guys, this is the finale of the first season of Outcast. I can't stop dancing. This is the finale of the first season of Outcast. As a capper to this season-long story that we've been watching and getting very, very involved in as we go, how did this episode work for you guys as not just a capper to what's already happened, but as a little bit of a tease of what's to come? What are your initial thoughts?
Good. Good ending.
What she said.
Good job, guys. I felt it felt like, yes, this is what should happen. Like, we've wrapped up, we've started new mysteries for next season. I feel like we checked all of the season finale boxes off. If that makes sense.
Sure, yeah, I think so. For sure.
Yeah, I loved it. To me, there was almost a twinge of hope at the end, which, you know, it's like at least Kyle is with his daughter.
Yeah, was there?
And I'm like, okay, father-daughter outcast, but everyone is infected. You know, it's not just Rome. He's starting to see.
You can't leave, which is your hopeful thing. You have to stay and fight this forever.
Yeah, what hope are you seeing here?
I'm like, hey, I'm trying to be bright here, you know?
Oh, right. No, okay, so yeah. Abby,
I didn't see the glimmer of hope that Lucretia saw, but I get where she's coming from with the, you know, Kyle and Amber together, and they're like a little duo, and I love the way he explained, like, we just have superpowers or whatever.
Yeah, that was like the sweetest scene.
I'd rather be able to fly. And I'm like, I get it, girl.
I would also rather
be able to fly.
Or go invisible.
Yeah, I mean, like, why don't we could just jump right to the end and talk about those final moments, because I agree, I really loved seeing Kyle get to be a dad to Amber without the baggage of all of this horrible stuff that's happening to and around them. For all of about 45 seconds.
Didn't you get that feeling? You're like, oh no, they're happy.
Oh yeah.
I know.
Exactly, and especially because, you know, we're building towards the final moments of our season. We know that there's going to be a season 2. Hooray. And so we know they're not just going to tie everything up neatly with a bow. So the moment that they're hanging out in front of the car, next to the car by the gas station, they're really cute, like, you want some snacks? Can't have a road trip without snacks. I'm going, oh, it's just something just egregiously terrible is going to happen. And it's not like I didn't expect anything horrible, like violent, to befall either one of them. But I'm going, how are we going to bump the stakes up even further in these final moments. And of course, it had never really come up before, but the idea that whatever's going on is not confined to this one little town. And I'm wondering if that's something that at any point during the season, any of you were actively thinking about, because it really hadn't occurred to me till we get to that last moment. And then I went, oh, right, the devil doesn't just stay in one place. He's
barring a hellmouth, I was like, there's no, like, there didn't seem to be any direct link. And they keep prefacing it, like, the world. They're like, one of us comes into your world every day, I think is what Sydney said this episode. I was kind of shocked at how prevalent it seems. You'd think it'd be like one creepy dude at the gas station and not the entire gas station.
For sure. Yeah. And it's everybody, it seems like. And it's 10, you know what I mean? It's like 10 people at the gas station, but it's literally every person. It's like, and it's enough to where this moment where everybody stands stark still and stares at them is just, it's like, come on, just let them. Let them get somewhere. Let them, like, have one nice night at a motel, somewhere where they can breathe, decompress, they can have some hot tea or something. But, no.
At least let them get their snacks.
Yeah, we should, you know? Do we know, like, the biggest cliffhanger is whether or not this poor little girl gets her blue icy.
Oh, gosh. I know.
Well, to me, it's just, like, being that they could just touch these people and they'll freak out and get out of their way, I think that they can even get that icy on the house, depending on how the guy in the behind the counter is, you know?
Well, literally, it's like, so, and this is something I wanted to talk to you guys about how we got confirmation of certain things, but we didn't get a ton of new information, and I wanted to get your feelings about that. But one of the few things Sydney does make clear to Kyle in this finale is we need you for what's coming, which is why it's like, I'm gonna lock you in this little room so that you are where we can find you when we need you. So if I'm Kyle and I'm going, oh, you guys are everywhere, I'm going in there being like, hey, so I know this ice is like $1.68,
but you need me.
I'm like the candle, right? Yeah. You know, you all flock to me and whatnot. And, like, if you don't give me this icy, who knows? Maybe when the merge happens, you don't know where I am.
Yeah. I might go dark all of a sudden.
Also, a side note. So, you know how you were just saying that, you know, we need you and locked him in. Does Sydney know that Amber, then, is, like, one of these things, too?
I'd be surprised if he wasn't aware.
Okay. Is that why he wanted
her? Yeah, I was going to say, why keep her if he doesn't suspect? And he senses everything else from, like, a mile off. Like, in the house, he was like, oh, there's one of me somewhere close by, and then walks over to Kyle's house. So yes.
Sydney knows everything, is that what we're assuming?
Well, so we're gonna jump back, and we're going to do a deep dive into all the specific plot points. But the impression that I got was that they took Amber specifically so that they'd be able to control and manipulate Kyle.
They know
if we have Amber, whether or not they know Amber has powers, they know if they have Amber, they won't even have to go look, and Kyle will inevitably come to them.
True.
Okay. In some respect.
Yeah.
Yeah, because to me, I actually had predicted that Amber would be like Kyle, yay me, but at the same time...
We did, this was something that we talked about a little bit.
But yeah, with the Amber being kidnapped by Sydney thing, I did think that they were just trying to control Kyle, that maybe even they don't know that she's like him until then, you know, because they didn't seem to treat her like they did Kyle.
Yeah, that's true.
For sure. So I do want to jump back to the top of the episode, because we open pretty much exactly, even moments before we left off in the previous episode. So I want to jump back, do a deep dive beat by beat. But before I do that, guys, I feel compelled to tell you really quickly about our sponsor, because our sponsor is Loot Crate. And I don't know if you guys are super familiar with Loot Crate, but Loot Crate is really, really cool. It's a subscription box service. And if you're watching Outcast, maybe you've, like I have, you've jumped over to the comics and, like, the nerd world is your domain. That's like your the bread and butter, the joie de vivre, if you will. That for some people, myself included, it's these like nerdy worlds that we love to step into. Sometimes makes it worth getting up out of bed in the morning. Loot Crate will take all of these worlds. They'll bring a box full of these worlds right to your door every single month. With Loot Crate, you get collectibles, apparel, and more from your favorite pop culture franchises delivered right to your door every single month. We're talking a new t-shirt in every crate, figures, comics, stuff for your kitchen. It's a whole wide range of exclusive items you can't get anywhere else from fan favorite franchises. Say that 10 times fast. Fan favorite franchises like Harry Potter, Marvel Comics, Fallout, Star Wars, and so much more. And you can get this for less than $20 a month. Guys, that means I can afford it. You can get it for less than $20, all right? And it's a theme box, you know what I mean? So every month, we're dealing with a different nerdy theme. And it's August. We just saw the release of Suicide Squad.
Yes.
So the theme for August is the anti-hero. From bad guys doing good things for the wrong reason to good guys with questionable tactics, August is the perfect time to explore the anti-hero. Walk that hero-villain line with this 100% exclusive collection of items from DC Comics, Archer, Dark Horse, and Kill Bill that includes two great collectibles, a wearable, and, of course, the monthly tee. And don't forget the pin. Now, this is a limited time offer. These theme boxes are only around for a certain amount of time, so you have to act before the 19th of this month. If you don't order it before the 19th, boop, gone, done. You can't get that box anymore. You got to jump onto the next one. I'm sure it'll be great, but this one sounds really, really cool. So if you want the August box, you have until the 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific to subscribe and receive that month's crate. And yeah, when the cutoff happens, it's done. Too bad. Next one. Make sure to head over to www.lootcrate.com/buzz and enter the code buzz, that's B-U-Z-Z, to save $3 off any new subscription. Loot Crate, come geek out with us.
I totally did it, guys. I can't wait to get what I'm getting.
Well, these boxes are super. They're actually genuinely cool.
There's really never been a time I've been disappointed. Every single time I'm like, I have either new decorations or great party stuffer gifts. Which are great. Everyone loves nerd stuff.
All right, so let's jump back to the top because we open with the last, what were the last moments of the previous episode. We see Megan possessed. We see her playing around with poor dead Mark. I take my notes are typically broken down by character, so it'll be a section for Kyle, it'll be a section for Reverend Anderson, it'll be a section for Megan, section for Giles. My notes for Mark Holter this week read as follows. Is dead. And that's yeah. It. Poor Mark. In the comics, we're now pretty much caught up with the comics in the TV series. Mark has a different fate in the comics.
Really?
Yeah.
He's attacked. It plays out pretty similarly to what we see in the show with Megan becoming possessed and attacking him. But he ends up, she pushes him out of a window.
Yeah.
And he ends up being hospitalized. And he wakes up and he's alive. There's a chance he's never going to walk again. But Mark continues to be a part of the supporting cast, whereas on the show,
he's gone.
Poor, it doesn't seem like David Denman's contract is getting renewed for the second season.
I mean, zombie.
Zombie
dad. I will watch this.
We're dealing with the supernatural here, and David Denman is a super charming and likable actor.
Yeah.
So I'd be like, just maybe next season, the weird goop monsters like can take a weird physical form, and they'll put your loved ones' faces on it to screw with you and stuff, and we'll get to see more David Denman. But it, for the time being, doesn't seem necessarily like that's going to be the case.
No.
We get what for me was maybe the two most disturbing images of the season. And one was the skin.
Yeah.
That she's like peeling off or something.
Yeah.
And first time, it takes a lot to make me uncomfortable. And I'm watching this going like, no, 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 no. I'm like grabbing my own hand. Yeah. Being like, don't pull my hand skin off. That's terrifying. But then the eyeball thing.
That was gross. That made me cringe. Because I was like,
you gotta commend like props and makeup for working together, because the fingerprint on the dead eyeball, I was like, that's attention to detail. And it was fun. It was gross, but it was fun.
Yeah, and it just goes back to, and then later they talk about how it's such a, you know, they're sort of like children, just starting to get to know their surroundings. But to me, it was just, it was so odd, but at the same time so fitting for her to be like poking him. Like you do when you're a kid and you find like a dead animal, you just poke it.
Yeah, and speaking of kids, we see Holly and Amber and they're downstairs, and it makes it even more upsetting, because this horrific scene that they're about to stumble into, this scene where Holly's mother has murdered her father and is like wandering around in a weird demon daze, it's interrupting this scene of the two of them just being kids.
Yeah,
just go quietly sneaking downstairs to get seconds on some cereal, and then they see this and they react the way I imagine many of us would. Which is scream and run away. That's probably what I would do as well.
So they saw Mark dead, right?
That's what it looked like.
That's what I thought. Yeah. And okay, because I remember last week I said I was nervous the kids were going to walk in on it, on her like hunched over playing in the blood. And even though they didn't walk in at that moment, they did see it, which is awful.
Yeah, and they run and they hide in the closet, which of course echoes some imagery that we've now seen a few times. Mm-hmm. But then I guess this is the window. We don't see them make the phone call, but I guess we can assume this is the window where Amber picks up the phone, calls Kyle. So we get Kyle and Anderson breaking the door down to get into the house. And thankfully, they find the kids unharmed. less thankfully, they find Mark about as harmed as one can be. And Megan is gone. Megan has just bailed. Which is, obviously, we track Megan's movements throughout the episode, and we get to where she's going pretty quickly. That moment where they see the scene at the house, and Megan's gone, and the window's been smashed, yes. And, like, it's empty, crazy, ominous, and super, super disturbing. And Megan's just, like, off, she's just off wandering the town.
Yeah.
And we get some interesting moments with her, because this is the most time, as far as I remember, this is the most time we've spent with somebody immediately after becoming possessed. So we're watching this new, effectively a newborn creature, try and navigate the world in Megan's body. And, like, one of the things that I thought was nuts, it's really well conceived and executed scene where she wanders onto that football field.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And the sprinklers go off.
Yes, I loved
that. Bless Robert Kirkman for always having space for comedy in these incredibly dark worlds that he creates. Because that scene made me laugh out loud, and I was like, thank God, it was getting tense in here. As soon as that water turns around, she has just the completely normal reaction of just like, what's hitting me and why? Yeah. And then just to run like slapstick style into the springboard, which is great.
Yeah, it was so Sam Raimi, but I loved it.
It was. But this was also the first time that I felt, and now that I'm reading the comics, I'm getting a little confused in places about when they're revealing which pieces of information and which version of the story. But is this the first time that we've gotten a clear indication that they're not just holy water, they're like very, very, very disturbed by water? Or was this something that we seeded in earlier? I'm actually struggling to remember now.
I think this is the first time in the show that we're seeing this kind of reaction to water.
Because, didn't she kind of have that reaction when she was initially in the shower? I think I think when I first saw the shower scene, I thought it was her just screaming just because it was, like, entering her.
Yeah.
But now I'm looking back thinking that it was because the water.
Yeah, and Robert Kirkman actually explained this. If you watch the little after bits on Cinemax, sometimes they'll have like him or somebody come in and talk about scenes. And he talks about that scene in particular and how the water is. And it's really more about, you know, it's this new, you're new and this is a new sensation. You're like, what the hell is this? Sort of freaking out rather than anything in particular, you know, that's causing them, you know, harm. It's just a matter of, you know, if you've never felt water for the first time, you're going to be like, what the hell is this?
Okay, so if it's something that Kirkman is talking about in interviews related specifically to the show, then I feel totally okay to start walking in that direction.
Yeah.
Because in the comics, by this point in the comics, they've already had a number of conversations specifically about that, about how their senses, when they're first dropped into these bodies, are crazy, crazy, crazy heightened. And we're seeing that. I mean, we're seeing her reaction to the water. We're seeing her reaction to the girls screaming. I mean, obviously, look, little children screaming at very high pitches is probably going to be irritating to just about anyone.
Yeah, I was like, it bothers me.
But a very specific, visceral reaction to the loud noise. And this is also the same episode where we finally get the conversation between Kyle and Reverend Anderson, where Kyle goes, I'm starting to put together that the amount of time that these creatures inhabit their hosts impacts greatly the state that they're in as they're driving, and also the state that we leave them in when we pull them out. These are things that they've been seeding in the comics well in advance of this point in the story, but now we're finally getting to some of that stuff, which is interesting to watch play out.
Yeah, and we all had kind of suspected the amount of time had something to do with it. But what I found was interesting in that revelation of their conversation was that it was revealed that Blake had been infected for years, for sure. And that was something that they really hadn't indicated too much of the exact timeline. We were led to believe that maybe it had happened pretty quickly, but, you know, so that was interesting to me to find out that. And that showed that it was outside of this world because that didn't happen in Rome. So, yeah, that was sort of like inching out into more that maybe it's been going on outside of Rome for much longer.
Sure. Mm. Yeah. And so Kyle and Anderson now, without a clear heading, they know they have to find Megan. They know they have to stop what's going on. But they also now have to deal with, well, Mark is dead. What do we do? And so they go to Giles. And they basically lay it out. They lay out what happened. And Giles, even knowing as Giles does that something's not right. And like, I think he has no problem necessarily believing what he's being told. But it's a question of how am I going to take this and tell other people? Like, what you're asking me to do is literally you're asking me to cover up a homicide. And Anderson makes the point that, well, you're the chief of police. The law is basically going to view this however you tell the law to view this. I thought that was a really interesting moral moral dilemma, moral quandary that they're directly putting Giles in, because even though it's ultimately for the right reasons, they are effectively asking him to thoroughly compromise his professional integrity.
This is a classic early Rick situation where, you know, Rick in Walking Dead is like, am I still a cop if there's no world to protect? And he has to make all these very difficult decisions morally. And I feel like poor Giles is now in that same situation of like, I believe them when they say it technically wasn't her, and yet it was her. But, you know, I think he's probably at this point had enough of putting good people away and having his friends turn their backs on him. I'm glad he made the decision he made. I'm glad he went in that direction to kind of cover it up. I think it's going to help us get to the bottom of the mystery faster than, like, locking her in prison with
you. Oh, for sure. Yeah. Well, so then here's my next question. Based on the way that next scene is played with Giles, where we see Giles at the house and he makes that phone call he makes about how we got to come clean this up, do you guys think there's any chance this is the first time he's done something like that?
No. Yeah, I mean, being that he was friends with Ogden, yeah, who is pretty much the henchman to his wife Kat's helping of these creatures, who would say, he's probably done this quite a few times.
Well, you can travel all the way back to what, episode 2, when Ogden and Giles had that confrontation, and they talk about their kind of seated past and how they've had these different interactions, and I know secrets and things, and yeah, it definitely wouldn't surprise me if they had been in cahoots and done some sly things on the side before.
Oh, yeah.
We do, especially the conversation, whether it was last episode, or it's, I think ultimately when the two of them are saying goodbye to each other, and a couple of conversations that Giles and Ogden have had, it definitely seems like their relationship has been one of having each other's backs and keeping each other's secrets, more importantly. And that could just be me reading into it. The scene seemed to be designed for us to read exactly that into it.
But at the same time, what kind of throws me off a little is the way that Giles was so genuinely confused at what Ogden was doing when he, like, burnt that trailer. You know what I mean?
Well, I don't think Giles has any knowledge of what Ogden and his wife have been doing. But before that, because he called him his oldest friend. And so I think before that,
they've way had, back.
Like, yeah. Back when they were young and just starting out in their positions. Okay. And kind of full
gotcha.
Power.
That makes more sense.
Yeah, I feel, and the clarity that Giles does end up getting, whatever clarity he's able to get from it, comes from that conversation that we do see where Ogden finally tells him about what's going on with his wife and what they've been doing in the camper. And, you know, the same conversation where he says, well, I want to be with this weird possessed version of my wife. It's awesome. And I feel like that's the first time where Giles has even a passing relation with something resembling clarity where Ogden is concerned. And even like you watch Reggie E. Kathy's performance, especially in the back half of this season, where he's being more and more directly faced with stuff that he's forced to accept but has no rational clue how to deal with. Just watching that dude's facial expressions as people give him new information is wonderful. So Kyle and Anderson, after having this conversation with Giles, they leave Holly and Amber with Giles' wife, which of course turns out to be a terrible idea. More on that in a minute. But then they take Giles' cars, what I gather. They take Giles' car, or they just take the police scanner out of Giles' car. And they go trolling for Megan.
That was actually a really smart idea. They're, you know, it's not just that they could come to Giles because he knows what's going on, but they're like, oh, we can get a police scanner, and then we'll see if they report, like, some meth-out woman going crazy. Yeah.
And the scanner ends up being largely useless, partially because they can't understand it at all, and partially because the one person they do find, thanks to that scanner, turns out to be not Megan, but in fact, a crazy, she's got some problems.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So a lady at a not so great point in her life.
Yes.
But then it's Anderson who goes a little bit out of nowhere, but I'll go, you know what? Maybe he's just been quietly thinking about this for a while. And like, he has that idea about how, you know, they're like children and they're looking for, if not a parent necessarily, then a protector.
Well, he's poked and prodded into that. And what I really liked about that moment was it's finally Kyle being like, look, dude, you are not even looking at these people. You're so wrapped up in what you think should be happening that you don't even look at them. Like, give me some information. You are useful. Like, you have knowledge. Like, you can use it. And I was so proud. I was like, finally, Reverend can, like, see where his place in this partnership is.
And I think it also helped, I think, for the Reverend to hear from Kyle, like, I need you, because he always, we've always said how he was, like, jealous of Kyle because Kyle had all this power. So I think him hearing that probably gave him a little boost.
Yeah, I love this Kyle reassuring Reverend Anderson, because actually most of the season is about him, swallowing his pride and learning that he really hasn't done all this good. And then this, you know, in the finale, we kind of wrap up. Kyle's like, no, I do need you. This is the part where you're useful. This mm-hmm. is what you bring to the table. And he just needed to hear that.
Yeah.
He does turn right. He writes that ship so fast. He's like, I am useful. So he has all these bright ideas. And this is Reverend Anderson I've been waiting to see. I feel good about it.
It's interesting to watch their dynamic over the course of the season, because it starts with one very specific balance of power. And you see their working relationship one way as they try and exercise these entities from these people. And you watch over the course of the season how the power dynamic completely shifts into a total reversal. And then they finally meet up again at the end and have something similar to their earlier working dynamic, except that both of them are in completely new personal spots. Yeah. And I thought that was really deftly handled. So they have this conversation, and Kyle goes, makes the connection. Like, he's always been a protective figure. Even going back to childhood, was always a protective figure for Megan. And so it does stand to reason that Megan would go looking for Kyle, which she did. Yeah. And they get to Kyle's house, unfortunately, just too late, because Sydney has already found Megan there and has sent her off. Meanwhile, Aaron, the King Joffrey of Rome,
the worst,
has shown up at Miss Giles' apartment, house, their houses, her place of lodging, and has forced his way in and abducted Amber. Before we even get there, by the way, let's track this back. So, how did Aaron know the children were there? Well, someone, one of Sydney's people, told him. How did Sydney's people know that the children were there? Because Mrs. Giles was talking to Kat about it on the phone.
Which says Giles is not talking to his wife. He's clearly keeping her in the dark. He's like, oh no, don't worry about it. She's like, I'm here to help. And he's like, no, no, you don't need to know that. I would take care of this myself. Like, if your best friend, if your wife's best friend is now an evil demonic thing,
yeah.
I feel like that's the first thing. Like, okay, so she what we don't know. Do is share secrets with her anymore. She's psycho. And I feel bad, because it definitely kind of ruined her night.
Also, yeah. I, like, honestly, I don't know what I was thinking. I feel like an idiot. I thought that Aaron maybe honestly was telling her, I need help.
For about
you can't trust that ginger kid.
I fell for it. I was like, what? And then when he...
For about half a second, I started to get worried, because it was going on just long enough that I started to have this... I'm like, really? Are they? Because that would feel like a wildly unmotivated character pivot. And I'm like, well, okay. I mean, I would accept it and move on, because the show's been doing a great job in every other respect. But I was like, yeah. And then he forces his way in, and I was like, oh, it's okay, because he's evil and is going to hurt people. It's fine.
It sucks.
And he totally
does. Because I thought it, because they showed that right the scene before where he kind of sees some of the stuff going on. And I thought, I don't know why I would think that. He also saw a man carving into another man and thought that was cool. So I should have known, but I didn't.
Yeah, he sees him take this woman out of the house, and he's like, all right, he's got something going. Now what do I get to do? And then, here comes Kat. Well, we need you to take this little girl. All right.
Yeah.
He's just so excited to be into the evildoers over here.
Can
so
you imagine, bad. Like, the scene we didn't see where he gets this assignment? Yeah. Can you imagine how pumped that kid must be?
And, like, I would love to have seen the scene him taking Amber.
Yeah. You
know, how that played out.
But I feel like it was smart not to, because then we would have had to watch this little kid overpower a grown woman, and then what? Like, throw Amber over his shoulder and walk out. Like, there are ways to do it, especially if he has a weapon on him or something.
Yeah.
You could just use the threat of violence to get that accomplished. I feel like it'd be really awkward to stage, practically. Yeah.
See, in the scene I missed is the one of the other afflicted, possessed. The other possessed woman who, like, clawed her eyes out.
Yeah.
That we seen there. I'm like, where was that scene?
Yeah, we kind of wanted to see that.
I was there for it.
But is that in the comics?
No, it happened in the thing where Ogden's wife is taking care of her, and he's, like, patching up the eyes. But I just wanted to, like, I don't know, I don't think that's a scene in the comic. I don't recall it if
you,
it
like,
is.
Wanted to see
but
it.
I just, it's so, it's such a visual kind of graphic that they show of her, and she's somewhat important. I just like violence and the last thing I know. And I would have been happy to watch this woman claw her eyes out.
I agree. You know, we need more violence on this show.
Yeah.
that's what this show is. Yeah. But we do to what you're saying, we finally get some clarification on what this abandoned department store is supposed to be. And it's essentially a bigger version of what they were doing out in the woods.
It's yes. the Macy's of the trailers.
Yes!
Yeah. They upgraded a little.
Yes, they're now, they're and apparently because it's everywhere, they can set up franchises. Very exciting. Very, very exciting business prospects for Sydney in the future. This was the whole plan, by the way, is like one day to just like build it up from nothing, take the company public. He's just going to retire somewhere. But we get a sense that it is. It's a bigger version of what they were doing out in the woods. And we see little bits of Kat, you know, nursing some of these people that are in transition. And we don't get exactly why, say, this woman claws her eyes out, but I think we can infer, based on what we learn about how heightened their senses are, based on the other available clues. Mm-hmm. It's entirely possible that maybe it's like the light was too much and she clawed her own eyes out because she couldn't take it, something like that.
Yeah, that's what I would think, especially since the light is what seems to bother them the most. I mean, even as the further they get into the bodies.
So Kyle and Anderson determine that, okay, we know where Amber is. There's a note left at Kyle's house. My guess is the note says, we've got your daughter, we've got your sister. Sydney probably drew that little face where like they're pulling their eye down and sticking their tongue out. One of those like,
It's a sad crying emoji.
And so obviously they've got to go after them. And Kyle says, you know, this is, if you really believe in this, you know, if you really believe you're fighting the devil, you have to do everything that you can to stop him. You should stay here and do nothing for some reason. I'm going to ask you guys. How did you guys read that? Because it struck me a little oddly that Kyle wouldn't want to bring in reinforcements for something like that.
I feel like Kyle is just like, nope, gotta save my daughter mode. He's Liam Neeson right now. He's like, give me back my daughter.
Yeah, I don't think he liked being doubted. Anderson was like, slow down and take a moment. He's like, how dare you? I have already lost my wife and my mother. I'm not losing another, and my sister now. Like, I'm not losing another woman to this. Like, either you're with me right now or I'm out of here. That's kind of how I interpreted the scene. I do think it was silly not to bring backup. And it worked out in the end, but you think you'd want to go there fully enforced.
My only thought about that is maybe, because we didn't read the note, maybe something in the note
said, come
stipulated,
along.
We have your daughter, you have to come alone, which is why he meets Sydney on the road like
he
does.
Yeah, that's what I kind of just like assumed when he went alone, that there was something in there that he had to.
Yeah, it totally said, don't bring pentagram chest.
Leave him alone.
Old Penty.
Yeah.
That's what we call him now, Old Penty.
Old Penty.
Oh, no.
That is my thought. That's what makes the most sense to me, especially given the way the next couple of scenes with Kyle and Sydney play out. Plus, if Kyle has been paying any attention to Reverend Anderson's behavior, he knows that he probably doesn't have to be told to do something drastic and extreme. I feel like Kyle trusted Anderson. Even if Kyle wasn't conscious of it, Kyle could trust Anderson not to do nothing.
Maybe Anderson was part of the plan all along, and he went there so Sydney would think he was alone.
Yeah, because maybe that's it. Because Anderson immediately goes to follow Kat, you know, and see, you know, what everybody else is doing. Kat, Ogden, Sydney, see who's moving, because he knows that they've got something to do with it. Yeah.
Also from the booth, hashtag Old Penty.
Yeah.
Yes, please.
Yes.
But that was my biggest thought. And so while Kyle gets a bag thrown over his head, gets put into Sydney's 3 body trunks.
Yeah.
And that really was a thing at one point, by the way.
The writing there, it was so superb. That was the most terrified I've been in this entire series, was that scene. And then directly afterwards when they're locked up and he's like, need me for what? And he's banging on the door and Amber's terrified. Like, those two moments were so creepy. And Sydney's monologuing just keeps getting better and better and, like, creepier and creepier.
He's practicing.
It's really exciting. definitely. He's got all the spare time while he's shaving in the mirror.
Yeah, that's all I figured. It's like
3 body trunk. That's good.
he writes it down, you know what I mean? And like, you've got him like, he's eating eggs or something. He's just like learning his lines. And he, like, quietly, no dialogue. You know what he's doing. And then he gets to something he wrote and he goes, And then he just keeps reading.
So Sydney is a stand-up comedian? Because yes. I do all those things, guys. Yes.
he's just working on his material, and then, like, once a year, he gets, like, an evil hour together, and he goes and he does it, and then he, like, goes home and he writes a new evil hour for the next year.
Was the bonfire his big debut? He was, like, really prepared. He's like, this is my moment to shine.
Yeah, I want to see that now. I really want to see a Last Comic Standing type show, but it's all people who are possessed with these, like, outcast demons.
Yeah, the evil speeches. I'd watch it.
Especially, like, Sydney can be the host and MC, and then everyone else is, like, a mix of people who, like, some of them have had the demons in there for, like, a year. One of them, like, the new, like, the hot, edgy up-and-comer has been possessed for about 3 hours. And they're just up there, like, and they're all like, this is avant-garde. This is amazing. So, back in the world of the show that we did watch, Kyle is going along with this in the interest of, okay, at least I'm locked in a little room. But I'm locked in a little room with my daughter, so...
It's not that bad.
Could be worse.
Right? Yeah. There are worse things. And finally, Kyle says, you know, what's basically demands answers. Before he even has to really get all that demanding, frankly, Sydney's like, yeah, well, told you I'd tell you some stuff. So now you're in this room. Mm-hmm. Something like Bond villain it up, and I'm just going to tell you some stuff right now. And it's stuff like, you know, we can't stay where we're from. So we come into your world all the time because we have to. Where are you from? Same place you're from. That's why we need you.
Where am I from? Yeah. What are we talking about? There's a lot of information I'm missing. Yeah, and I felt like, did it feel like to anyone else that Sydney was trying to persuade Kyle into being like, you're one of us.
Yeah, I totally felt like he was going, one of us.
And so he says, you know, you're from the same place we are, so we need you for what's coming. And that's why I'm going to keep you in this little room. And you're just gonna hang out here, and like I'll slip you some food every so often. You're just gonna hang here till we need you. Meanwhile, Anderson, never one to not do something belligerent and crazy
with the tire iron, no less.
By the way, I loved that moment where he pulls up outside and he's like, "All right, am I gonna be a holy man with my exorcism kit, or am I just gonna go crazy belligerent vigilante with the tire iron?"
And then
he's got good the tire iron in his hand.
I back him on that choice.
Yes. Yeah, it's like red pill, blue pill. I don't know.
So he goes in, and this I really, actually really, really dug the way this was conceived, the structure of this from a storytelling perspective. Because we've got Kyle on the inside, we've got Anderson on the outside, and they are effectively, without, I think, immediately knowing that they're doing so, working together as a team to bring this enterprise down. And I liked it. You've got one force working from the outside in, one working from the inside out. Kyle is able to break out of this room, and I'm going like, well, Sydney, then maybe put him in a better room. Maybe put him in a... Like, because Kyle has the superpower, but he's not the Hulk. He's not Captain America, which means a normal dude with some adrenaline going could literally punch his way out of this room. Why was he in that room to begin with?
Poor decision, Sydney.
Nah, not very good. He's like, he's crazy smart, but he's new to our world, and he doesn't really know, like, walls. He doesn't
maybe
know
maybe this
from
was,
walls.
Like, the strongest wall they had. Yeah. Like, he was like, it may not hold, but it's the strongest we've got. He's surrounded. We're probably going to be okay.
Also, did you read it the way I did? I thought it was interesting that they basically throw Kyle and Amber into another closet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just like, stop. That's mean. That's so mean. Why are you going to rub it in? So, as Kyle is trying to break out of this room, you've got Anderson just going to town with his tire iron. It was... uncomfortably satisfying to watch him just like swinging it, Ogden.
Totally satisfying.
He's swinging it, Ogden's wife. Kyle gets out. Crazy chick with no eyes is like grabbing on Kyle, trying to like drain his juice or whatever. His dark flubber, as I believe we call it. And you know, Anderson has to get it off of him. And then they, you know, Kyle uses powers, gets the demon out. And then hey, there's Megan. Pop, here she is. And this was cool.
This was really cool. Awesome.
This was cool. So Megan attacks. Megan doesn't really seem to be in there. She's calling Kyle outcast, and Kyle's trying to reach his sister. Ain't working. Megan turns on them, and then all of a sudden, look, it's Amber! Amber jumps on Megan.
Get out, like, my daddy!
That was so sweet.
It's like, they're not going to hurt the little girl, are they? They hurt children on this show. What's going to happen?
They started by hurting a child.
Punching a child in the face was like first thing out of the door.
Right when she jumped out, I knew that she was going to have that.
And she, power. And not only does she have this power, it looked to me like she's got an even greater command of it than her dad does.
Yes.
She just gets a good grip on Megan's face and basically just slowly rides Megan as she collapses back down to the ground.
Yeah, slack and just kind of rigid at the same time. Yeah. And just, and watching it just pour out, like, just very quickly. But then I, of course, had a flashback to when this first happened with Allison, and she was still saying that her mom would be better off in a coma like her grandmother. So you wonder how much she's actually able to do. Is it kind of dispelling them, but not totally? I don't know. I'm not 100% convinced that once you're affected, you're not completely changed forever.
Well, yeah, especially being what you do when you're infected. And I think that that's really, for the most part, what these people seem to struggle with. Like, Allison struggled with hurting her daughter. Megan, I mean, being that it's her husband and not her daughter so much, it might not hurt as bad, but still. I mean, and plus, this is
the love of your life.
Well, that's the thing. I think that's what, it's different because, oh my gosh, what's her name? Allison.
So
Allison. Like, she hurt her daughter, but she didn't kill her.
Yeah.
So Megan straight up
killed her husband.
But I think that's right, too, is that after it's what you do kind of while you're infected that can end up hurting you after. Because obviously you're not going to be the same knowing the stuff you did.
Yeah, and I think that that's really more what it's about than anything. And yeah, with Megan, this is not the first time something horrible has happened to her. With Allison, we don't know her history, but Megan has come out of, like, you know, the Donnie situation on the other side. So as horrible as this is, like, you know, she's got Kyle, she's got her daughter, so she has hope.
Also, I thought that they weren't going to tell her.
Well, they tell her, but they're not going to say that you did it. But it's like that whole conversation, and we don't get the entire conversation, but that little scene where she's awake, she's aware, and she asks, where's Mark?
I'm like, oh, man.
It's just devastating.
And you'd think Kyle would learn, like, you can't lie to the ladies that have been affected. Like, it didn't work well for your wife. It's probably not going to work well for Megan. And it sucks and it's painful, but his protecting people often gets in the way of them healing, I feel like.
Yeah. It's tough because it's also, I don't think it's something that, like, psychiatric medicine is quite equipped to deal with yet. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, like, it's tough because on the one hand, he tells Megan, you know, it wasn't you, and he's telling everybody it wasn't her. And that's true. Based on the rules established by this world, it's true. It wasn't her. But as we saw with Allison, she still has those memories. She still, whether or not she was driving, she was still experiencing it from the point of view of the person enacting the violence. So it's not quite as cut and dry for that person as you did or did not do it.
Yeah.
You know, God.
Yeah. And I'm really nervous about Holly. Because she saw it. You know what I mean? Like, she saw her dad. She saw her mom, like, there. I don't know.
There was that moment where they open the closet at the beginning of the episode and they find the girls unharmed. And, of course, Kyle's first instinct is going to be protective of his own daughter, embraces Amber. And the shot holds just long enough for you to look past them and see Holly in the closet alone. And it's like, for God's sake, somebody hug this kid.
Yeah.
She has had a whole, like, event, like a life-changing moment, which, Kyle, you should know better than anyone. Yes. Someone hold her hand. Like, even when they're, like, loading up the car and Amber's the one crying and I'm like, Holly needs looking after you.
So I'm kind of nervous about how that hurt Megan and Holly's relationship would be after this, because even though she didn't hurt Holly, you know, the way that, like, Allison hurt Amber, it's pretty traumatizing.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. I definitely think it was smart not to start touching on any of that yet, since we know there's going to be a second season. I feel like to deal with something like that effectively takes, you got to time and you got to let it breathe and you can't rush character details like that.
For sure.
So I'm glad that they didn't. So the next morning, we get what we get with the very last scene with Kyle and Amber at the gas station, but we also get a couple of other pieces of business. Actually, before we get to the next morning. So Anderson, just not great at thinking. And I get it, dude. I get it. You're all fired up from raiding the Devil's Compound and coming away victorious. And I get you want to put a stop to this. And I get you think that the way to do that is by burning the Devil's house down with the Devil inside it. However, in a world where there's not only one person Like, period? Don't you want to make sure that the person you see inside is the person that you intend to set on fire if you're going to set someone on fire?
Reverend's maybe like, you give him an inch, he takes a mile. You right, know, no, it's like, absolutely. You give him one, like, I need you, and he's like, he takes it too far.
He's like, I got this. I'm going to murder people now. And even, like, the townspeople don't believe you. Like, your community doesn't believe that guy is a devil. They think this is a kindly guy who's come back to bury his friend. If there's any trace that you burned this down, and seeing as you're not, I mean, oh, goodness. Not Giles, but starts with an O.
Ogden.
Thank you. Ogden's a fire chief. If he's able to connect you to this and get you out of the way of things, they're going to turn on you so fast. Mm-hmm. And you have, other than Kyle, one ally left, and you kind of killed her kid, so.
I wonder if he got a little too cocky, thinking whatever he does, because he's friends with Giles, is, you know, it'll get swept under the mat. But even if Giles wants to cover it all up, past a certain point, there's some stuff that you can't just disappear, no matter how hard you're trying. So, yeah, the show, we don't see a body, it's never made explicit, but it seems very much like the show is telling us that Anderson killed little Joffrey boy. And on the one hand, but on the other hand,
like,
he killed a child.
Yes.
Like, he's directly responsible for the death of a child, and he has this moment, in a way, like a confluence of circumstance that only fictional storytelling can provide us. He is talking to Patricia. Sidebar, did anyone else think that when he stamps out the cigarette and you see Patricia step into frame, that was a weirdly specific shot of her boots and lower legs, as if I was supposed to be getting specific information from that, and I wasn't sure what it was.
Yeah, I thought it was definitely a new character or the chief at first, so I was like, okay, hey, are you guys back on speaking terms? That was fast.
Sure. But then he goes, all right, so, like, guy, she and her son were both physically abused by the man of the house for God knows how long. Mm-hmm. You raise a hand to her son, you better have a more effective apology ready to go than, sorry what happened, I was a jerk. Like, dude, really?
But Patricia was like, that's alright, it's not the worst thing I've seen.
I know my son is kind of a jerk too, so.
And then it's like, alright, maybe you guys deserve each other, yikes.
Yeah.
But then she goes, I've got to go talk to the chief, Aaron didn't come home, and then he starts going, and then he sees Sydney drive by, and he goes, oh no, I'd done something bad.
I expected Sydney to have hydraulics by then and be like, you know, like some cool.
Yeah. I would have done
that slow window turned out. Yep. I love it.
And I was like, he just turns his head as he drives by perfectly, just turns his head and just blows a kiss at Anderson.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there was that. We don't see Giles again. Presumably, he had a long night of cleaning up a homicide scene.
Yeah, some explaining to do busy to his wife, perhaps.
Yeah, what's clearly he knows what's up.
Yeah, right? He's probably got to tell her. Yeah, let's not call Kat anymore and let her know anything because she's kind of a demon or, you know, something.
Right. So we see Kyle and Amber trying to go make a new start. But hey, yikes! As we alluded to up top, this seems to be everywhere now.
Yes.
Anderson has got a world of horrors ahead of him, and Giles probably needs to fix his marriage now.
And
our big bad Sydney is still just rolling around town, Sydneying everywhere.
He's on top of a mountain with his new Macy's project coming up. He's gonna be sitting pretty. And now we know that at the very least the surrounding communities are full of outcasts, so we're in for a hectic season two. I'm very excited.
I love how Kyle's like, oh, God, I gotta save the world now. Damn it.
And it's just, what a wonderful note to end on as well. That them looking at everybody else looking at them. Amber holding Kyle's hand and just that slow zoom into Amber. She goes, Daddy? And then ends credits. Oh. And I was like, oh my God, I know, right? Like, Dad, I want to hold his hand. Where are you?
Dad, what do we do now? It's crazy out here.
So, that's the finale. That's Outcast. The first season of Outcast. Ooh. So, before we wrap up, two things I want to do. One, this, in my opinion, crazy cool first season. I wanted to get your guys' thoughts on the season as a whole before we hit some predictions for season two and wrap it up.
Yeah, season as a whole. Great, wonderful, really terribly awesome violence, which I can always get behind. I love that Robert Kirkman always makes me question humanity and the people standing next to me. It's pretty cool. And if you haven't checked it out, somebody said they've only seen the first episode. Go back and watch it now. We're telling you how great it is. You know how it ends, but that's not the journey is what's important. Yeah. And it's exquisite. It's really good. I like it.
Yeah, this is like the first show I've ever kind of watched of this type. And I really enjoyed it. And I liked how there was this, like, the supernatural evil stuff, but then also, like, human evil. I like how they balanced that out. And with, like, the violence, I thought they did a good job at making sure it wasn't extremely violent every episode. You know what I mean? There was, like, a happy medium, and I thought they kind of, like, rationed it out well per episode.
Absolutely. Yeah, to me, this show, all 10 episodes have just been perfect. And I was just so surprised just to really be, you know, on the edge of my seat for every episode. And it was just, it's one of those things where you're like, wow, that all of it was good. I don't really have any complaints. And yeah, like the only thing that, you know, people are still wondering about is why did Donnie get to live?
Yeah.
Well, we don't know. For now.
Also, just the way it was filmed. It was filmed like a movie, and I loved that.
Yeah, absolutely. Amazing. I've made comments more than once on this show about how much the technical filmmaking aspects of this show make me so happy because they are so strong. I love that it's a show that is obviously very much about something as big and otherworldly and alien to us as demonic possession, but it is just as much about real world violence and the consequences of real world violence in various forms. And I thought they were able to find a way to tell both stories as one story crazy, crazy effectively. And on top of that, in a world where most horror shows, even some of the ones that I enjoy, most of the modern crop of horror TV shows seem content to riff on popular iconography from other horror stories, this felt very much like a fresh, organic story. It felt like a story, more than a collection of horror iconography that we could throw at somebody and have them go, hey, this is fun.
Yeah.
This is the horror show that I had no clue that I wanted, and I'm so glad that we now have it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, before we wrap, given where we left things, what do you guys think is going to happen next season? Like, where do you think we pick things up?
AfterBuzz TV predictions.
I don't even really know, like, where to begin. So, I'm just going to say, I don't know who Ogden thinks he is. And, like, you know what I mean? It's not going to be smooth sailing for him. And then I also don't even someone comment on Donnie. I think he's for sure going to come into play somehow. I don't know how. But I don't think we've seen the last of him.
I have a very crazy prediction, and I'll go quickly. I think Reverend Anderson is possessed. When he talks about finding God, he uses almost the exact same words as the church groundskeeper. He says he felt warm, and it took over, and he felt very connected. I read the first arc of the comics just recently, and I'm like, okay, that sounds a whole lot like possession. I'm not completely convinced it's the same kind of possession, and I think that's maybe why they're afraid of him. I don't think we fully know Reverend Anderson's power yet. I'm excited to get into season two and find out.
Yeah, that would be really interesting to see that Reverend Anderson has some sort of power as well, and like you say, that he's possessed by something, but obviously not the same thing, and that would be a really cool thing to also bring his pride back.
Yes, definitely.
And Childhood's Hour has a really good prediction that maybe they need Kyle for the merge because he's the original opener of the gate. That's actually cool.
Yeah, I like it. I like the idea that we're going to see the scope expand slightly as we get into the next season. My prediction, end of the first episode of season two, Kyle and Amber join the Avengers. And the day after it airs, Marvel Entertainment begins legal proceedings. And we get to watch two circuses unfold in real time before our eyes. Guys, I really love this season. I'm really excited for next season. Check out the comics. If you haven't, they're very, very cool. And it's not just a one-to-one adaptation. You're getting the same basic story, but told differently. It's worth checking out. That's going to be it. That's this season. Wow. That's season one of Outcast. We're going to be back, presumably, hopefully, if we haven't all been taken over by Outcast demons. We're going to be back to talk to you guys about season two when it happens. We're going to miss you. But in the meantime, if you want to continue the conversation about Outcast and really anything else, wonderful panel. Mm-hmm. Where can you be found on the internet?
I can be found on the internet at _AbbyVega.
I'm Joelle Monique. Find me everywhere at Joelle Monique.
And I'm Lucretia Lyons. You guys can always find me at LACRETIALYON anywhere on the internet, since there is only one.
And I am Lex Michael. All of our social media at The Lex Michael. Thank you guys so much for joining us all season. We will see you back here for season two.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.